If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Cool. That was good. That was good how I had everybody up on the screen and ready to go. Hello, everyone. This is the HP Podcast live. That's right. Sometimes things like that happen when you're live. I'm Bennett. With me here today are two of the most beautiful boys you've ever known in your entire lives. We're here to talk about some video games. I got Davey, the Bears, with me. What's up, Dave?
I'm good. I finished a nice little home project earlier today. Now, when I say finished, I mean I operationalized it. But long story short, I'm harvesting rainwater now, fellas.
Could you explain to me what operationalized means?
So, Ben, if you had asked me 2 days ago, do you plan on finishing your rainwater harvesting system? I would say yes. But after actually doing it, it's working, and I'm collecting rainwater, and I completed what I set out to do. But, you know, with projects like this, you kind of realize that there's a lot of improvements you need to make, and there's things you didn't think of. And there's, you know, six other little projects that kind of branch off from that. So it's operationalized, it's working, but there's now other stuff I have to do that I didn't think of. So
nice.
You know, when you kind of open a can of worms, that's sort of where we're at. But I feel accomplished. I feel good. I feel like, you know what it feels like? It feels like I got a platinum for a base game, but there's six DLCs that I didn't realize were there. That's the best way I can put it that's relevant to this podcast. So
what are you going to do with the rainwater you're collecting?
That is a good question, Ben, because what I didn't realize is so I have this barrel that is 240 liters or 60 gallons.
Okay.
And we got some rain today, and I, you know, I'm watching the rain and I'm thinking, you know, probably maybe filled up like a quarter of this thing max. I went outside and I was over half full after a couple hours of rain. So I got to figure out what I'm going to do. The whole point is so I don't have to water my grass with city water. I can just use collected rainwater to water the grass, and I don't have to pay for it.
Right.
But I'm going to have to manage this water because I don't need to water my grass for a little while. But
sure.
In the meantime, I do have a storm drain that's like just on the other side of my back fence. So I just kind of like am draining it for now. But
yeah.
Well, if anybody needs rainwater, like, you know, I'm your guy.
I was going to ask what happens to the water after the thing fills up. I mean, my in-laws have one too. I understand, but I'm like, you got a plan? Do you have a plan, Arthur?
Yeah, this was always my plan, but I didn't think I would need to drain this quickly. So,
yeah. Speaking of draining quickly, we've also got the most glorious ginger, Brandon Duncan, with us. Brandon, hello, how are you?
Speechless. For once in my life, I don't even know what to say to that. I'm tired. I'm very tired. We just got back from New York City, and I feel like I beat my body up in many different ways. Yeah.
Literally just wake up? I mean, I know you didn't, but you look like you're struggling, buddy.
I am struggling.
You are.
And I had a rough day at work, as usual, you know, the first day back from a couple days off.
Yeah.
And it's just like the 1-2 punch. It's like the 1-2 Mayweather. Right to the jaw today, boys. But
get the old one on my shoe.
That's right. But we're doing all right. We're here. We're living it up. New York was fantastic. I don't know if we're going to talk about it, but it was.
Oh, we can if you want. What was your favorite part of New York City? You've been to New York before. but it's been a while. And it was a different kind of experience when you went before, sure. right? You didn't walk everywhere, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I thought you drove.
We did, but then we ended up walking a lot of places. The person we stayed with was lucky enough to have on-street parking, so we just kept the car there and did most of the normal city commute without the car. So, no, but it was great. We got to go to Cat's Deli, which was amazing. That was probably one of the better parts of the trip, actually.
And you ate your entire sandwich, right?
I didn't eat all my sandwich, and thank you for publicly shaming me. I actually am happy you did this. Because I want to feel shame because of this. It was an almost $30 sandwich, and I didn't finish it. But it was actually worth it. Like, to be honest with you, I would gladly... I think I said when we were there, I would pay $60 for that
sandwich. You said that. I didn't know if you meant it or you were reveling in the magnificence of the meat.
You know? No. Not this time. But if you know anything about me, it's that I love food, and... I would spend more money on food than anything.
That is something I know about you.
Like clothes, fuck all that. You know, nice things in my home, I don't care. But I would, good food, I would gladly spend exorbitant amounts of money on that. So it was amazing. It was a lot of fun. And honestly, I got to say, aside from the sandwich, just hanging out with the people I hung out with, hanging out with you, hanging out with Dustin, Brad, the rest of the team at LSM. It was really, really cool. And although the city was awesome, I feel like I would have had just as good of a time anywhere. It was just good camaraderie. So
yeah, absolutely. Dave, have you ever been to Cat's Delicatessen?
I haven't. No. I feel like there's something similar in Montreal. I've never been to New York, but I've been in Montreal many times.
That's right. You've never been to New York. Yeah.
Okay. No, I haven't been to Cats. No.
It's like, I love New York. I love cities in general. It's hard to recommend New York. Because, like, there's so much to do, and there's so many cool things, and there's a lot of good shops and stuff like that. But also, it's just, like, it's dirty, it stinks, it's, you know, urban decay on a grand scale. It's just not, there's new stuff popping up, but all the stuff that's there is not being kept care of, and there are more types of turds from different... whether it's humans or animals on the sidewalks now than there ever have been before. Yeah. So it's a fine line. It's like, I love New York City. I love cities, but also kind of sucks to be there.
Yeah. I love the city, dude. I did. It was great.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely. And you didn't even try to inappropriately touch Lady Liberty, which I'm really pleased about, Brandon.
I didn't even have the opportunity.
Yeah.
So we'll never know what would have happened.
Hulk Hogan in chat says San Francisco is covered in human waste, Jack. That is what I've been told. And New York City is not nearly as bad as San Francisco, but it is in some parts disgusting. And I mean, we were in Chelsea. Chelsea's always been known for having, you know, a decent little scene. And I mean, it's still got cool places. But
dude, Ed says, what else were you beating up, Brandon? I was like physically exerting myself heavily and also drinking a lot. I mean, a lot of alcohol. I spent a lot of money on food, but I also spent a lot of money on alcohol.
I think it was a
masturbation joke. I'm pretty sure.
I know. But I'm just clarifying.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What did you drink? Was it hard liquor? Was it brown liquor? Was it
no
never light liquor. Platinum?
No, I did almost exclusively liquor this trip. I got a martini, a couple martinis as well.
You didn't pay for those, though.
No, that's true. But yeah. I drank just so much middle shelf gin. Just so much middle shelf gin. I was like, I'm in the city. I'm not getting fucking well. Fuck no, bud. So it was good, though.
Yeah,
it was good.
Benji Bop in chat says, good thumbnail, Ben. Benji, I appreciate that. For those who don't know what the thumbnail is, like many of the audio listeners and maybe people who tuned in while or on Twitter or while we were already live, and also my co-host, we're going to talk about the first story here is actually going to be about other game stores coming to Xbox. And I just stole some random thumbnail of a Xbox dashboard and like photoshopped in some stuff, you know, some like Epic Game Store and GOG. But then I had to throw in a few little features. The little profile picture in the top left is the Handsome Phantom, you know, our logo. And then the name is the HP Podcast. And then the gamer score is actually today's date in American, Dave, in American format. And the time on the right side is 7 p.m. You know, it's just those little things that I wanted to do make it feel special.
Above and beyond that. That's how you know it's not AI.
That's true. Although probably AI could have done that, but I did not do it. I did it the painstakingly annoying way. Well, speaking of our first story, we'll get to it right after I tell you about our Discord. You can hang out with us on Discord at handsomephantom.com/Discord, where you can hang out, chill, chat, mock people, whatever you want to do. Not like mean mocking, just like friendly mocking in our Discord. You'd also support us over on patreon.com/handsomephantom for as little as $1 a month. You get ad-free early access to the audio feeds, and you get the nice, warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart that you're supporting the three most handsome boys you know.
You know what I learned from the Discord this weekend?
What's that?
That one of our regular contributors, I don't know what any of you look like, but Old Pueblo, I now know what he looks like, and I'm assuming he's the man holding the camera. It looks a lot like Corey Barlog in a purple Handsome Phantom t-shirt. I don't know if I'm the only one who thinks that, but...
Let me see that.
Oh, no.
I've met Pueb so many times, but I just want to...
He does a little bit from that angle, and I got to say...
That. From that angle, yeah.
Dave, I got to say, I was manning the door at the event, the LSM event, and, like, helping a little bit, and he's like... This is what I need to get in. And he has the purple Handsome Phantom shirt. And I'm just like, all right, wave him in. Wave him in.
That's the free ticket right there, right, baby.
Yep.
Nice.
Oh, first story tonight. Number one, Chris Dring, head of gamesindustry.biz, suggests that Xbox faces challenges as a hardware manufacturer, particularly in Europe, where sales are declining. Some major companies question the effort of supporting Xbox, with retailers reportedly cutting back on Xbox stock. Despite Microsoft's acknowledgement of trailing behind PlayStation and Nintendo, recent plans include first-party games like Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, Sea of Thieves, and Grounded on other platforms. Xbox is also considering bringing titles like Gears of War, Microsoft Flight Simulator, and Starfield to rival consoles. This is all, by the way, rumored and supposedly stated by Chris Dring. Meanwhile, Phil Spencer has reportedly said he envisions a future, this is the really interesting part, where Xbox console users can access games from the Epic Game Store alongside the Xbox Store. He sees this as an opportunity to break down closed ecosystems and offer players more choice. Microsoft's commitment to PC gaming, exemplified by initiatives like Xbox Play Anywhere and Xbox Game Pass on PC, aligns with this vision. However, integrating PC gaming stores into Xbox consoles would be a complex endeavor, likely requiring verification systems similar to the Steam Decks. Despite the challenges, Spencer's vision represents a step towards a more open gaming ecosystem. Now, boys, people are upset. Oh, Xbox, you're giving away our games. You're letting other people play them. Boo-hoo. And then they're like, not only are we doing that, we're letting you play other people's games. Now, this isn't anything official. This hasn't happened yet. But Dave, what do you think? If you could have Epic Games Store, GOG, whatever the case is, on Xbox, is that a win or a loss?
I mean, why? I feel like I don't know what is on GOG or Epic right now that I can't already get on Xbox. Anything that would kind of move the needle for me anyways. And we've talked about this recently about how, you know, why would you purchase a game on Steam over Epic Game Store? And we've kind of struggled to find a compelling reason as to why we do that. So I don't know how having a PC storefront on your console would considerably move the needle on kind of, you know, the Xbox that to me is kind of on life support. Xbox feels cursed to me. Like, I don't know what it is, but there was a time when, you know, there was a number of like fair weather franchises that, you know, you had to have an Xbox to play. There was obviously Halo, and there was Gears of War, and you know, Tomb Raider was kind of had an identity on the Xbox for a little while there. But, you know, I kind of struggle to think of a franchise that now like is a reason to purchase an Xbox and have that hardware. I mean, I think Forza Horizon is kind of the only one. You could say Halo, but, you know, after the kind of reception that Halo Infinite has gotten. Like, I don't know if that's really, that has some work to do. And, you know, obviously there's stuff like Elder Scrolls, but even with, you know, the lukewarm reception that Starfield got last year, like, I even wonder about that. And I don't even know if people even associate Elder Scrolls with Xbox, and we don't even have confirmation yet if that's going to be an exclusive. But at the end of the day, like, I strongly believe in the Sony bump, and I strongly believe in the Nintendo bump, and that anytime you have a first party title coming from either one of those two, like IGN, GameSpot, they're always going to be well reviewed and they're always going to be well received, and like people kind of look at them differently. Whereas with Xbox, I feel like there's a bit of vitriol with anything that they kind of release, and I don't know if Microsoft is ever going to be able to shake that. A few weeks ago, when the news broke that, you know, Pentiment and Sea of Thieves and a couple others were, you know, these were exclusives at one point, are coming to other consoles, that to me was sort of the unofficial beginning of the end for the Xbox console. So hearing that Phil Spencer is considering bringing PC storefronts, which you say, Ben, would be huge, was kind of contradictory to me to that. You know, I'm wondering what their long-term strategy is, because, you know, Microsoft is still going to make a lot of money in their gaming division without the Xbox. I do think Xbox days are numbered, but the strategy here is a bit odd to me. In any case, you know, going back to your original question, having a game front, a PC games front on Xbox doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, if there's a game that I have to play on PC, then the reason I'm playing it on PC is for performance. And, you know, a year after the launch of an Xbox console, it's out of date compared to a PC. So I don't understand the logic there. I don't understand the draw, but, you know, it'd be interesting if they do get it done, because logistically that must be a nightmare, but I don't think that's really enough for me personally.
Brandon, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't this cut in on the sales on their own store?
You would have to assume so.
So with that logic, you say, why would they? Okay. And to me, I feel like the only thing that would make sense to that question would be to charge some sort of percentage to be on Xbox, where both parties benefit. But didn't we just get like a Paramount, a milestone case from a company that said, hey, you got to pay us all this money? And it's a fruit company, you know, Tim Apple. Didn't we just get something like that? So like what I'm saying is that like, I don't get it, because because it doesn't make sense. And it's just like, the only thing I could see possibly saving this right now would be that if somehow you could play more games without Live, like if they made that work and they really leaned into Game Pass and made it so that way, if you're just online, you could play. I mean, look at the PS3. That's really the future we're working toward. Just like, I don't have to pay for Live. Dave's talking about not playing, wanting to pay for PlayStation Plus. It's like, we don't even have to consider this sort of thing on PC. And I don't know, man, I don't know. You would assume that's a lot of their revenue is Live, but would that draw more people in than, like, would people be more apt to spend money on your store if they didn't have to pay for Live? I don't know. I'm thinking of a couple different things right now, but I don't know that the storefronts on Xbox really make sense to me. Like, I don't, Phil might want that, but I can't see how they would benefit from it. I mean, guys, can you see any way that Xbox, maybe these other platforms would benefit, but Xbox benefiting from this? I can't think of a way they would whatsoever.
I think, yeah, so I'm mostly in agreement with you guys. Brandon, to your question there, what way would they benefit? I mean, yeah, they'll probably get the 30, 33%, whatever it is that they typically get. Just the same way they do with EA Play. If you buy something through EA Play, or you subscribe on your Xbox to EA Play, not part of Game Pass, or Ubisoft Plus, or whatever others there may be out there, they're going to get some percentage. I think it's about 30 to 33% if it follows the rest of the standard, but I'm not positive on if they've worked out, you know, special deals with those guys, of course. So that's one thing. I think, and Benji said this in the chat just now, it might be a good entry for people who can't afford a PC, as a console can be a more affordable PC option. And that's true. And I think that that's probably one of the things they're looking at. Now, with that said, most things that release on Epic Game Store are also going to, they might be exclusive to Epic Games Store. They might be exclusive to Steam, whatever, but they're probably not exclusive only on PC. They'll have a console version that is, you know, separate agreement from that. So I do wonder what kind of thing it could, what kind of benefit there is. But I would have to say that, like, first of all, I think Phil's just speculating, hoping, wishing, you know, thinking. Somebody probably asked him, could you ever see a day like this? And he's like, yeah, that'd be great if we could have that on there. So I'm not saying like he's setting up some like future endeavor that they're working towards or whatever.
Right.
But I think that, you know, if you could get a thing where it's like pay $15 a month, you get Game Pass Ultimate. Pay $22 or whatever Game Pass Ultimate is now. Pay $22 a month and you can also get access to this Epic subscription and go through their store. And then, you know, they get a, Epic gets a portion of that. Microsoft gets a portion of that. Maybe you sign up for the Epic subscription. That doesn't exist right now, by the way. I'm just speculating on what could be the incentive in the future. Because you're right, there isn't a whole lot of incentive to Xbox other than you buying, like, you could buy the games on their platform rather than on Epic Games Store and vice versa. So, yeah, I don't know. We got a comment in chat. So don't the other storefronts get that 30%? From what end does Microsoft get their cut from the storefront or developers? I'm not sure what he's saying.
I think he's saying if there was storefronts on, like, would they be getting the cut from Epic or like a game that's on Epic?
Right. That's a good question. Yes.
It would.
I get it now.
Yeah. It'd probably be Epic. In that scenario, it'd probably be the storefront.
With the scenario right now where Epic's basically not charging you if you're exclusive on their platform for like the first 6 months, I think it is, it'd probably be Epic. But yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I don't really know that there's a, first of all, I don't know that there's ever been any thought before he said that about having other storefronts on there. But I think the more major concern is, what is Xbox doing right now? Like, I do think it's smart for them to put other games on other platforms. But then you see a statement like this and you're like,
dude, there's turmoil. There is some sort of internal turmoil for sure, because the messaging, I mean, all of it's been weird, whether it be us announcing this on a podcast or like whatever. It's just like, it's all been so strange, and clearly Xbox is going through some shifts. Do we think Phil is at the end of his reign? You know, we just saw Sony go out. I know Phil is mostly widely liked, you know, has done good things, but is it weird? Are some of these decisions strange? And I know you said it could have been off the cuff. Like, it could have been similar to him saying, you know, I hope one day cancer's cured. Right. like it could be something like that where it's like, yeah, of course, I hope that we all can play nice at some point. But,
yeah,
you know, it is interesting when someone of this status says something like this that is definitely not, he's not stupid. He plays a lot of Xbox. He knows somewhat what he's saying is going to be talked about and thought about in a very thought provoking way. And this is definitely not something that is, it's unprecedented, I guess, as far as consoles go. So,
yeah, it's a weird world right now in the gaming industry for so many reasons. So many reasons. Seriously.
Yeah.
Let's move on to number two, Dragon's Dogma 2. Despite receiving positive pre-release reviews, has faced a mixed reception on Steam post-launch, with only 40% of over 9,300 user reviews being positive. Players have expressed disappointment over the availability of 21 separate DLC purchases on day one, some of which they feel should be obtainable in-game for free. Performance issues and the inability to start a new game have also been reported. In response, Capcom issued a message on Steam apologizing for any inconvenience and stating that all items available for purchase can be obtained in-game. They are investigating critical issues such as crashes and freezing, aiming to address them soon. Regarding frame rate issues, Capcom acknowledged high CPU usage and is exploring ways to improve performance in the future. They are also working on a feature to enable players to restart the game on Steam and will provide more details soon. So, performance issues aside, we see that all the time. I'm not saying it's acceptable, but like, that's not news, right? I'm just including it because they made a statement about that. But Let's talk about the Dragon's Dogma microtransaction kerfuffle, as if you will. First of all, there was a lot of consternation over it, and you see things going back and forth and people saying like, hey, you don't need to get them. You have other people saying, well, the game would be different if they didn't exist. They would have made things differently. The interesting part to me is that apparently this information that there would be these were provided in their review guide, but pretty much no reviewers mentioned it. And then they didn't actually implement the store until the game came out. So that's also a point of contention. But Brandon, you just, I don't think you've gotten the chance to play it yet, right. But you just bought this game actually in the car on our way home from New York City. You went ahead and paid for it. So I'm curious what your thoughts on the whole issue is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like this sort of thing, but I understand it's something that happens often nowadays. I think I'd have a bigger issue with it if it was something that didn't already happen in many Capcom games. Why does nobody bitch about this in Resident Evil?
Yeah, I think they did, actually. Do remember some. Yeah, maybe not to the same degree because it was more items like fun items, not
unlock all items. It's like, you know, I don't know. And some of the stuff is a little scummy. Like you can pay to edit your character, right? Like that kind of sucks. I'm not saying it's good, but at the same point, I'm like, this isn't that much different than things they've already done. And I feel like the outcry, I'm not trying to defend the game because I haven't even played it. I've just seen some cool things, but I feel like we sometimes get mad about things that aren't that much different than things that already happened that didn't seem like there was much outrage about, and especially from them specifically. So I don't know. Am I saying it's good? By any means, no. But just don't buy it. Like, I don't know. It's, you know, just like the Battle Pass, like in any game, you don't have to buy it. Could the game have been different if it didn't exist? Possibly. Could it have been like Elden Ring, where none of this stuff existed and everything was earned in game? Sure. But most games aren't like that. And that's just the reality of the landscape. So I don't know. If you think this is scummy, just don't buy the game. And then maybe they'll stop doing it. That's all I got to say. It's just like, you know, how many people bought the game and did a negative review and you look at their Steam profile and they are still playing the game. Like, I don't know.
Dave, I was going to ask you, I was going to lead into your question. Sorry, Brandon, did I cut you off there?
No, you're good. But
okay. I was going to preface it with this, and then Benji said it in chat. He said, it's not even a Capcom exclusive thing. Ubisoft has been doing time savers in their games since Origins, and I don't think their game design has been pushed towards microtransaction the last 10 years or so. I was going to ask you about that, Dave. Like, this isn't the first time we've seen things like that. You get, you know, there was a, I think Origins, there was specifically like a pass that enabled you to get more XP. And in Dragon's Dogma 2, there's you know, microtransaction to give you more of the currency or stones that you need to be able to fast travel. And, you know, can you still play without it? Yeah. Does it affect the game design? Don't know for sure. But it seems like it should have been. It should be, yeah. What do you think about this? And what do you also, I want to get your take on the fact that it wasn't really fully revealed until the game came out.
Yeah, it's a wild concept where these publishers are putting microtransactions in their game so you can pay to not play their game or play them less. But I mean, Benji brings up an interesting point. Like, Ubisoft has been doing this for a long time, and the reason why they've been doing it for so long and the reason why they're still doing it and the reason why Capcom is doing it and every other big publisher is because people are buying it. It's making money, and it's an easy thing to shovel in your game, and it's, you know,
it's
we were kind of Yeah, we were gushing over Capcom a few weeks ago, and I think that, you know, we should all still feel very positive about Capcom because, you know, they are a very good company, but they're still a big company, and they still their end goal is to make lots and lots of money and reduce costs as much as possible. So, I mean, yeah, it is what it is. Brandon, you said something really interesting at the end where people bitch about these things on Steam and then you look at their hours. And it's like, at the end of the day, Steam reviews don't matter. And we know it, and Capcom knows it. And, you know, with all that said, going back to good guy Capcom, it's nice that they still came out and addressed these things and just tried to clear the air a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's a good way to kind of lead in and to tell people that your game has microtransactions like this. And, you know, clearly Capcom did not find a good way to do this with Dragon's Dogma 2. But I mean, I think people are just looking for something to talk about with this game because it seems very positive. People seem to be loving Dragon's Dogma 2. I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about it next week, Brandon. And I don't think this is what this game is going to be remembered for. So, yeah, I think the more concerning stuff I was hearing was like the FPS issues where like people were going into some of the larger towns in the game and having really, or like people were killing NPCs everywhere just to get better frame rate. So I assume Brandon, you're playing on PC. So, you know, going back to the last conversation, I mean, that's one advantage of playing on console is you generally get, you know, not as good performance, but it's a little bit more stable. So I hope Capcom can address those things a little bit sooner, but again, it's just nobody's really figured out a good way to break the news that there are lots of microtransactions in their game. But as long as you make it so, you know, it's not super grindy without buying microtransactions, or just make it so you can earn them some other way in game, I think you're good and these things aren't going anywhere. So
yeah. And I want to reiterate that I was talking to Gene Park from the Washington Post this last weekend. And I said, did they really not tell you guys that there were going to be microtransactions? And in fairness, I did not read, I don't read really reviews. I sometimes look at an aggregate score. So I didn't read Gene's review. I didn't read anybody's. So I don't know if he had mentioned it or not, but I know a lot of people didn't. I was like, did they really not tell reviewers that there were microtransactions? He goes, yeah, they did in the review guide. But, and we know this too, the problem with review guides that they send out to reviewers is a lot of times you get to like page two of the review guide and it's like, okay, this is going to happen. Make sure you don't show anything after this. And so like a lot of times you don't read review guides unless you get stuck somewhere and you need something because it's going to spoil the game for you. And reviewers are reviewing the game as a job, but they also want to play the game and enjoy it. So, you know, maybe that wasn't the best way they could have gone about it. Maybe they could have. I don't know. But it seems like Capcom did tell the reviewers there's going to be a store in the game. But it wasn't like apparent outside of the review guide that, again, is mostly disregarded except for assets. And we know there's issues here. And please don't show this and before embargo, whatever.
Well, but like genuine question, though, like why would they put the storefront up for people that are playing it early that they sent it to?
I think that if they put it up and just made it and just disabled the ability to actually purchase anything. And that should also be actually a positive to the game is that it's not obvious. It wasn't obvious to these people who didn't have access to the storefront that there was going to be a storefront. There's games like sometimes I'll see an ad for like a mobile game or something. And I look at it and I'm like, I guarantee that game is fun to the extent that it can be. But I can just tell by the gameplay that there's going to be microtransactions. Apparently, people played Dragon's Dogma for, you know, the entire game. And some people played it multiple times before the review, and they didn't think, like, maybe there's a microtransaction for this. So I think that's a positive to the game. Yeah. But, yeah, I would like them to put them, have them there. Have the tab for the store. Have the store, but you can't actually purchase anything for the reviewers, whatever. But, yeah, that's just my gripe, I guess.
Well, no, just to, like, go back to this, right? It's like these negative reviews, 45 hours, 50 hours, 60 hours. Bro, you played longer than some whole games. So yeah. Like,
and the game's been out less than a week, right?
Say what you want about it. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I get it. I'm not happy about it. I want to make sure that's clear. I'm not for microtransactions, but what people that complain about these games and complain about microtransactions don't understand is that, I'm going to go back to Elden Ring. Games like that are outliers. Like most games can't exist like that. These companies need to make money and they're going to make money in every way they can. So if you're stupid enough to save time and not play the game, they're going to let you give them money. I mean, that's just like why like in all reality, like I don't have any stake in Capcom, but like, why wouldn't they allow you?
Right. And I think there's an argument to be made for, I don't personally subscribe to the argument, but if you're playing a game, if you're somebody who plays a lot of games and you know, like, I don't have an example here, but like this game's coming out next week. I'm playing Dragon's Dogma 2 this week, and I really want to play that game when it comes out. And you want to pay $5 to speed up the game a little bit, even if it's just like an extra fast travel, whatever. Okay, that's how you want to play the game. You want to play it faster. I don't know that that's dirty. I think it's dirty when it makes it, when the presence of the microtransactions makes the game drag out further.
Right.
Or makes the game worse because they're trying to get you to buy the things. And I don't see any evidence that that's the case with this game.
And I think that's the point that most of the people that are complaining are missing, is that's the only point to me is what you just said, Ben. If the game is worse because of these, that's bad.
Right.
I think a lot of the cases I've heard against that thing is you know, in some Assassin's Creed game, the case has been made that Ubisoft has intentionally made certain tasks in the game grindy and overly time consuming to drive people towards those pay to play less mechanics. And that is scummy. But since it's Ubisoft, I don't believe it.
You don't believe it? Because, yeah, that makes sense, Dave. Yeah.
Are you French Canadian?
Oui.
Let's move on to number three. Larian Studios, after the success of Baldur's Gate 3, has decided to move away from the franchise and Dungeons & Dragons entirely. Studio founder Sven Vink confirmed they won't be working on any DLC, expansions, or a sequel for the game, opting to hand the IP back to Wizards of the Coast and focused on new projects. Michael Dowse, Larian's director of publishing, expressed excitement for the studio's next venture. He explained that while he initially considered continuing with Baldur's Gate, it goes against Larian's ethos of pursuing new endeavors. Despite this shift, Larian will still support Baldur's Gate 3 with a cross-platform plan for mod support. The game's success was noted in Hasbro's financial report, highlighting its contribution to Wizards of the Coast's growth initiatives. However, layoffs within Wizards, including the team involved in Baldur's Gate 3, have raised questions about the franchise's future. All in all, Baldur's Gate 3 has still sold more than 15 million copies to date. This number is twice that of Divinity Original Sin 2, which was previously its highest selling game. Brandon, I'm going to go to you first again, buddy, just because you're the Baldur's Gate 3 fan between the two of you. How do you feel about the next game Larian comes out with? Probably not going to be similar. At least it will not have a Dungeons and Dragons type system.
That's great. I don't know. They have proved how talented they are in so many ways, and how they care about the quality of what they're doing. I saw some information about this. Like, that head of the studio, I think, said either today or yesterday, these people online need to take off their tinfoil hats. There's not some conspiracy with Wizards of the Coast. They didn't wrong us or anything like that. And that was a statement from him. So, like, clearly, it's... they want to work on what they're passionate about. And it's like, if they've got all of the passion out of this, then they can move on. And I'm going to play whatever they make next, Dungeons and Dragons otherwise, because for me personally, maybe that was the reason a lot of people got in, but that wasn't the reason I got in. I loved the game because of how it was, not because of the IP. So I don't know. I think this is good. I would love to see them spread their wings in another way. I don't want them to be confined, because this is such a monumental achievement that I think that sometimes it's like the first God of War and the second one. Not that the second one was bad by any means of the reboot, but it's like whenever you're confined to the same thing twice, it's like, how much can you grow? And I feel like this studio grew so much from Divinity to Baldur's Gate 3 that I wouldn't want them to plateau. And I feel like the best way to not plateau is to not be stuck. And doing something new is always good, especially from talented people. So new IP is good. We say that time and time again. Not that this is going to be new IP. We don't know that for sure. But something new from them, I have faith, is all I'm saying. I have faith.
Yeah. Dave, your thoughts?
This is like the mic drop, the slow walk away from the exploding the explosion, or the stroll off into the sunset, like the George Costanza leaving on a high note. And this is kind of a luxury that you don't see a lot of developers get. Like, could you imagine if Sony Santa Monica made God of War 2018 and just said to Sony, you know what, we're happy, we're gonna leave it where it is, and they'd be like, excuse me, bitch,
right?
Making like 10 more of these bad boys. They're making money. Right. And it's that thing. Like, do you die a hero, or see yourself, you know, kind of survive enough to become the villain? And I think Larian is in a position where they can kind of just walk away. And it's, you know, I'm happy to see this, because I'm not a Dungeons and Dragons person. I know you don't have to be to play Baldur's Gate, but Knowing, you know, what the studio has done over the last year and how many new fans they've brought into this franchise and into this ecosystem, I'm excited to see what comes next from them, because, you know, this is a studio that I want to see work on some other stuff and not kind of be stuck to one franchise. So, again, when you're working under a big publisher, and we've talked about this over the last couple of weeks, is sometimes you kind of you sell your soul to the devil, and this is an instance where, you know, a bigger developer doesn't have to do that, and they can kind of decide their own fate. So, you know, I know that the Dungeons and Dragons and the Baldur's Gate universe is kind of endless, but for I don't know if either of you finished Baldur's Gate 3, but was the door left open for a sequel or DLC directly or anything like that, or was it kind of?
I think that kind of depends on which ending you get, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely more definitive, but
there are strings that people were complaining, like, they really wish, if this is it, if this is all they're doing, there's strings even character wise that they're like, kind of felt like were unfinished. Probably better than most games, but, you know, still people are like, I wish I could see more of the end of this or this wrapped up differently. But for the most part, it seems to stand by itself.
Nice.
Some good news. Some more good news. Number four, Alpha Protocol, the 2010 game by Obsidian Entertainment and Sega, has made a comeback on GOG.com after being removed from all platforms in 2019 due to expired music licensing. The game, available for $20 with a 10% launch discount until April 3rd, features all original music, modern controller support, text localization in 8 languages, Windows 10 and 11 compatibility, and cloud save support. While not a remaster, it includes achievements on GOG. This return to online stores is unusual because most games are often retired. Polygon reached out to Sega for further details on the platform availability, but did not receive a response in time for their publication. I don't really know. I don't have a lot to say about Alpha Protocol, but because I haven't seen it. But I was just, we talk a lot about losing games and the games being lost to time and, you know, the physical versus digital debate and stuff like that. And I just wanted to kind of, you know, shout out, celebrate a game that I know is beloved coming back. Dave, you'd love to see it.
Yeah, it's, we saw a shitty example of this last week with Battlefront Collection. Alpha Protocol, this is, I'm happy to see this with this game in particular, because if I recall correctly, Alpha Protocol was not well received. I don't think it was poorly received, but I don't know if the world was ready for a stealth action RPG. I know the reason that I didn't play it was because the RPG part didn't really resonate with me, and it kind of just looked like an opportunistic Metal Gear Solid or Splinter Cell ripoff.
Yeah.
But when you kind of think of, like, take kind of Bourne Identity and add in a little bit of Mass Effect, and that sounds fucking cool. So, I mean, this is cool to see this game hopefully get a bit of a revival. And I'm thinking about other kind of cult classics from that era, and I'm thinking what else I would like to see either have just a re-release, not necessarily a remaster or a remake or anything. And some of the games that came to mind were like Geist. I don't know if you remember that game.
Yeah, a little bit.
There was a game called Kill Switch I think it was the cover-based shooter before Gears of War, and it kind of walked before so Gears of War could run. Beautiful Joe was another one. And I think that's been re-released a few times. And the other one I was thinking of was the Street franchise, like NFL Streets, NBA Street. All the big kind of titles from EA. I don't know if that really, again, falls into the cult classic category, but some games from that era that I think would be cool if they made a comeback. But yeah, I hope some people get to play Alpha Protocol, because I know a lot of people who kind of like skipped it and went back to it were like, yeah, this is a really good game. And I might check it out myself, actually.
Nice. Bando.
Yeah, I don't really have any experience with this at all. In fact, I didn't even really know it existed. It sounds cool, and I'm always glad to hear this sort of thing. I mean, that's what I'm going to kind of go back to, is that this is an outlier in the time we live. And so to see anything come back, especially with all the stuff you said, Ben, it's like modern controller support. They didn't like botch the soundtrack and put some shitty, you know, replacement in. It's like, it's the experience. yeah, this is just good news. I'm glad to hear this. And it makes you wonder. It's like, is Sega trying to revive something? It's like, what is the call? I mean, sure, maybe they think they can make some extra money off this, and maybe they had a support studio take it and just, you know, hammer it out sort of thing. But from what you said, it sounds like there might have been a little bit more love than even some studios that love their IP put into it. So,
well, that's really what I'm thinking is, like, this is a game that came out in 2010 originally. Right. I think that's right. And 9 years later, it gets delisted, probably right before the deadline for, you know, the music rights and whatever other things that were causing the issue. And so they didn't just say, like, okay, let's renegotiate these rights or whatever. They came out with new music that's original, which costs a lot of money. It costs more money than a lot of times licensing music, especially if it's not, like, you know, top 40 type stuff. They put in new controller support. They localized more text. They obviously had to update things. They put in cloud support, and they're like, here you go. Now, I really don't think that they thought, man, this game is still selling so many copies, it's worth it.
Right.
They thought, yeah, maybe it'll get a bump because people want a new way to play it. And certainly there's people who never played it before. But yeah, you got to think they're like, okay, we're going to revisit this franchise or something like that. Or we want all of our games to be available for everybody to play.
Right.
Even if they're not, I mean, Sega probably doesn't care about that as much as the consumer does, of course. But yeah, so it's interesting. I guess we'll see where that goes, if anywhere, for sure. Let me look at this. Ed Casty says, I think good old games themselves sought out Obsidian to get the ball rolling. So maybe GOG saw that there were people who wanted it. I don't know. Lockmore enters the chat and says, when was Alpha Protocol gone? From what I have noted here, 2019 to 2020, to just recently. Ed says, breaking news, 3 Tales of games were delisted on PSN. Good, disgusting weeb trash being delisted. No, I'm just kidding. That's interesting. I wonder what that's all about. I haven't had
Tales of that. Like Tales of the Borderlands? Or
no, like Tales of Arise. I think people just call it the Tales series. Tales of the Borderlands is something.
I don't know why different. My head went to Telltale and all this.
Like that yellow guy, Tales?
Fuck him.
Yeah, Tails, Miles Prower. That's right. Lockmore also says, breaking news, Ben is beautiful. He is, I mean, he's dead on so far. So
actually,
yeah, it's finally a good delisting.
I think it's Ben is handsome, Locke.
Well, Ben, that's fine. Don't contradict the man.
Did I?
Ooh. We traded 3 Tails for Alpha Protocol. Although we didn't get Alpha Protocol on PlayStation, but that's fine. That's okay. Number 5. In February, U.S. consumer spending on games rose to $4.7 billion, with software revenue reaching $4.1 billion, a 5% increase year over year. Gaming hardware sales, however, dropped by 30%, totaling $349 million. Sony's PlayStation 5 led console sales both for the month and year to date, while the Nintendo Switch and Xbox Series X and S followed in dead last. Accessory revenue grew by 25%, hitting $219 million, with the PlayStation 5 DualSense Edge wireless controller, Black, specifically, topping the sales. Helldivers 2 claimed the top spot for game sales in February. Dave, this is for you, joined by new releases like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and Ubisoft Skull and Bones.
Yeah.
Whoa. Do you know what didn't make that list?
Tell me. Please tell me.
Kill the Justice League. I don't even think it... I'm going to have to look it up, but I saw someone post on Twitter that I don't even think it was behind Skull and Bones.
Yeah.
Most things are behind Skull and Bones. Yeah. Think about it.
Dave, speaking of Skull and Bones, I was in a retro shop in New York City this week, and most of the retro shops in New York City, like, it's kind of even worse than GameStop in some sense, because, like, you know, at GameStop, you can take a used game back that you don't want or you haven't, you know, you've beat already. And they'll give you like 15 cents for it. And then they put it back on the shelf for $4 lower. This, people were selling used Skull and Bones, or sorry, used brand new games like Skull and Bones for, you know, pretty much full price, maybe $5 off. But Skull and Bones specifically, alongside Kill the Justice League in one of the retro shops, the last one we went to, Brandon, were both marked down to $39.99 already. And other games beside them were still like $65. But those two games specifically were already marked down to $40.
Why are you telling me this, Ben? I already paid full price for it. And yeah. I paid my $10 for my PlayStation Plus. Mm-hmm. I beat the game. Mm-hmm. Why do you do this every week? Okay.
Well, I just, you're trying to talk about games. We're like amateur games journalists here. I figured you'd just want to know for your data points. Well,
I know. I get the ads every day. It's on sale already for 20% off on officially on storefronts. So.
I'm thinking about picking it up.
You should. It's a good game. Yeah. Anyways, to talk about the story that you
mentioned, I guess we could talk about that too.
The software piece is interesting. I went back and I looked at January, February of last year, and the big ones that I could pull out were Hogwarts Legacy was the big one, obviously. Mm-hmm. Forspoken, probably not a big seller. Kirby, Destiny, Lightfall. I don't know how that kind of factors into new software sales, but in any case, I don't know, a 5% year-over-year increase for Final Fantasy and Helldivers. I think those were kind of the heavy hitters from January and February. That's surprising to me, because Hogwarts Legacy sold a ton of copies. So to see an increase, even though it's only 5%, is surprising. But you know, I think the surprise of 2024 so far has been Helldivers, and considering the trajectory this game has been on, I would be very surprised if we had forgotten about Helldivers by the time the Game Awards roll around in December, because I think this is going to be the story of 2024. Yeah. Not just because it's a bit of a lighter year, but people seem to be having so much fun with this game. As far as the hardware piece, we're about 4 or 5 years into this generation, so I think the install base is kind of established when it comes to, you know, PlayStation 5, Switch and Xbox. So a 30% sounds like a pretty big drop, but I think it's probably makes a bit of sense considering where we are. We haven't had that mid-gen upgrade, and I kind of wonder if you guys think, is that actually going to come? Are we going to get that mid-gen upgrade? Am I going to get my Xbox with a disc drive, fellas, or am I going to be stuck with the Series S until you know, the Switch 2 comes out?
Dave, you could buy an Xbox with a disc drive right now if you wanted to.
No, but I want a compelling reason to. And okay, as we've talked right off the top, I don't have one. But you know, if I got an Xbox with a disc drive,
with a what,
that where I didn't have to choose between a performance mode and a frame rate mode or whatever the fuck they call it, and I could just kind of have all of that on at the same time without making concessions, that I would pay money for. So,
right.
But sure. I don't know. I feel like we would have heard about this by now. You know, we got the new SKU, the new model for PlayStation 5 with the detachable disc drive and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. Where's the PS5 Pro or the Xbox Series X or whatever we're going to get?
Dave, you really got to get back on Twitter, bro.
Yeah.
Dude, it's all
something.
It's everywhere.
Okay.
There's no official announcement.
The PS5 Pro is probably coming this year. At least that's all signs are pointing towards that. As far as Xbox goes, I haven't, aside from that leak that we got that said there might be a mid-gen refresh, which we already established the time of talking about it, that it was incredibly old. To me, I would say Xbox is in a bad position to release a mid-gen upgrade, because why would they release a mid-gen upgrade when their current flagship system is underperforming? Of the two consoles, now you could say, Brandon, they always do this. You know, they release side by side with PlayStation. But what I'm saying is we're seeing some very uncharacteristic things from Xbox. And the numbers are showing that their flagship isn't doing as well. Do I think that people will flock to Xbox if they have a more powerful console? No, because the console is not what sells. The console is not what sells the consumer. It's the software. And it's not even what makes the money. So, like, I don't know. To me personally, I don't know what you guys think. I do think we're going to get a PS5 Pro. And I'm not surprised we're not hearing anything from Xbox. In fact, I think it makes sense for them not to release a mid-gen update, if you ask me. What do you guys think?
I don't know if Microsoft is in a position to not kind of punch back. at what Sony does. And I feel like I agree with you. Everything you're saying, like they're just, I don't know if it would sell well. You know, the Series S is still the better deal, especially because most people are purchasing this for Game Pass. But I like, what would it signal to investors if the PS5 Pro was announced and radio silence from Xbox, except, oh, more of our games are coming to PlayStation. You know, dude, what I mean?
What would it signal to investors if the head of your company says other storefronts he would love if they came to your console? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I'm saying, is that, like, that's the environment we're living in. And it's like, I don't know. Ben, thoughts?
There was a recent, like, within the last week, I think it was either... These are two very different places that I don't know how I'm getting mixed up, but it was either Brazil or South Korea. We got a leak of like a new SKU for Xbox. But I don't remember which one that was. So maybe I made the entire thing up, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems pretty likely, even if it's not definitely this year, that we're getting a PS5 Pro. There's there's too much smoke for there not to be a fire there.
Right.
So I'd say that's going to happen. My real cause of thinking is I really want, if there's a new PlayStation 5 Pro come out, I really want to get it. But am I going to get it? I want it because it's new and it's shiny and I like new and shiny things. But do I need it? Like, I guess the real kicker is going to be GTA 6. I'm not going to be able to play it on PC. Am I going to buy a freaking PlayStation 5 Pro just to play GTA 6? And the answer is most likely yes.
Well, I don't know if you heard, we won't spend much time on it, but there's development problems with GTA 6. Yeah. You guys seen this on Twitter? It might be pushed another year. So you might have some time, Ben.
Yeah.
You might have some time. But do we foresee something like, now, I know the Series S is their best-selling console of the two, correct? Do we foresee there being a price drop on the current flagship and the S going away if they decide to put something else out?
No. I think they need a digital something in their catalog. And if Series S is what is most people are buying, and if Series S is what's moving surprisingly well in Asia, then I don't know if I could see them dropping the Series X altogether. I mean, they could if they have like a proper successor, like a mid-gen successor, but I feel like the Series S needs to stick around, and it maybe gets like a slight redesign or a new color or something just to stimulate sales a little bit. But I don't think they expected this, but I think they need that more than they need the X personally.
Agreed. Sorry, I'm just processing all that in my brain. Guys, let's stop talking about stinky Xbox. I'm just kidding. I like Xbox. And move on to what we've been playing. I'll go ahead and go first because I've almost played nothing, as mentioned. I did play a little bit more of Rebirth. Still in the same chapter, just doing side quests as I was last week. Played one night of Helldivers 2 last week. And then Deep Rock Survivor came out with their new map. I played it. It's a lot of fun, except for there's these rolly things that roll around constantly and do so much damage to you, and I hate them. But I only got to play that for like maybe two runs. So that's all I got. Dave, what do you got?
I put a little bit more time into Dark Souls 3. Generally, when I sit down and have like a proper session with Dark Souls 3, I like to get through an area and kill a boss. But as I'm approaching mid-game, and Brandon, you can correct me if I'm wrong if this is mid-game, but I'm going to call it mid-game. I've started to hit walls.
Yeah.
So I sat down, played it Friday night, and the mistake I made was drinking several strong beers, which isn't a good idea with Dark Souls. But the good news is I got through Fair and Keep, which for those of you who have played Dark Souls will know that it's the poison swamp area of Dark Souls 3. And it's you know, annoying. It wasn't very difficult, but it was annoying and it's difficult to navigate and stuff. So I got through that, but then I got to the Abyss Watchers, which I think... These guys were supposed to be like this game's version of Ornstein and Smough with sort of a different twist on them. But
right.
I got kind of a grasp of, you know, the mechanics, and I got pretty close a couple times, but it just kind of got to a point where I was like, it's not going to happen tonight. And I've kind of had a hard time going back to it. I've been busy and stuff, but you know, when you're in a FromSoft game and you kind of hit a wall and you're like, you're nervous about picking it up and playing again, because you know, the big fear is not overcoming that boss in the next play session. And that's like, that was really going to hurt me. So,
Dave, the Abyss Watchers, definitely not an easy boss for sure.
Yeah.
And as someone who has played FromSoft games while intoxicated many, many, many times, the only recommendation I would make for you is that is the perfect time to grind. It is. I'm telling you, dude, you don't need to make meaningful progression. So either grind or help other people with bosses, because helping other people with bosses. I'd have to look at the numbers. Well, I guess you're playing on PlayStation, right?
No, PC.
Okay. I could look at the numbers. I'd imagine there's still a pretty robust multiplayer community in Dark Souls 3, as most of them have. But yeah, helping people is like what I do when I'm intoxicated, especially in Elden Ring. It's like, you know, if I die, I lose nothing. And most of the time, you know, I get to help somebody out. It's perfect.
Yeah, I kind of did that. So when I got to a point where it was like, you know what, Abyss Watchers, I've reached my limit. I'm not going to beat them tonight. I went to Cathedral of the Deep, that area, and just kind of ran around a bit, just tried to unlock a couple of bonfires. So I made progress elsewhere, but yeah, I'll jump back into it this week and hopefully make some more progress, because I feel like I'm far enough in where I would like to finish this game. So I also jumped back into Luigi's Mansion on my GameCube, and having fun with that. Nothing more to say about that. I do want to go off script slightly here, because I watched the Uncharted movie. So permission, Ben and Brandon, may I speak about a movie?
Please, please do.
When have I ever told you no about anything, Dave?
I don't know. We never talk about, there's so many like games now in movies and television, and we never really talk about them on the show. So yeah. I wasn't sure if it was allowed, but
that's fine. Yeah.
So when the casting for this movie was announced, I think there was kind of a collective like groan / what the fuck when we got Mark Wahlberg as Sully and Tom Holland as Nathan Drake. And I watched it and I was hoping that like the casting was fine and they nailed it, but I was left really, really wanting with the casting of Nathan Drake in that movie. Like they just didn't give me what I wanted and what I loved about Nathan Drake through the four games. And you know, it was a really entertaining movie and I enjoyed it quite a bit as a movie, but as you know, someone looking for fan service from the game, I was like, no, they kind of missed it. The thing is you know, there was a little cameo from Nolan North and I love that. And there was an after credit scene where it seemed like they started to lean into the caricatures from the game a little bit more. So when I saw that, I was like, that's fucking good. And there was even a scene towards the end of the movie before the credits where Tom Holland puts on like the gun holster and you're like, okay, he's starting to become Nathan Drake. But then the movie ends and, you know, I Googled it afterwards and apparently there is a script for a sequel, but a sequel hasn't actually been greenlit. So even though I was kind of disappointed by the fan service from the movie, if a sequel came out, I would be really excited for it, because it appeared like they were starting to actually lean into the Nathan Drake and the Sully that I kind of know and love. But yeah, so yeah. Uncharted movie. It's worth a watch. It's definitely worth a watch, especially on streaming service. But yeah.
Dustin and Brandon and I went to see it when it was in the theaters. And I liked it. I thought it was good. It is interesting how much of the different stories they mix in to the first movie. And then they also just like totally go off script for some of it, which is fine. I know that's going to happen. I thought overall it was very serviceable. The casting, although I agree, I kind of shook my head at, I think it worked. It doesn't work as well for people like us who we knew the characters somewhere else before. It's like when they, in the 90s, they did this a lot where they'd replace an actor on a sitcom and just expect you not to notice. It's like, well, you know, I noticed, but all in all, it's not that bad. But no, I think the movies, I think it's pretty good. I am curious with future installments, because it made a lot of money. There will be future installments. You know, how are they going to have to come up with new material? There's plenty of material in Uncharted, don't get me wrong. But like some of the stuff in Uncharted 4 was in the first Uncharted movie.
Right.
So are they just going to totally I don't know. Brandon, it's been over a year since we saw it, but.
Oh, yeah, easily. But I didn't have as much of a problem with the casting. I just had a problem with Sully, mostly. I thought Tom did a fine job. I didn't really, of all the people you could have cast as Sully, I think that Mark Wahlberg is just, that it's a bad pick, man. It's just a bad pick, you know. I even young Nathan Drake, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it with Tom, but the movie was serviceable, and I do hope they make more. I agree with you, Dave. I think towards the end they started to get some of the charm, but I think Ben touched on something that made a lot of sense. I think it's hard for us, having loved and played the games. I feel like they can add more fan service once they've established the character, because that's really what the entire first movie was. I mean, it has to be entertaining. There has to be action, but, and by fan service, do you mean you wish you got to see Nathan Drake shirtless? Is that what you meant? Or
no, it was, I don't know. It was just like the wisecracking Nathan Drake, overly cocky. I know you're being funny, but it's genuinely like, but you bring up a good point, is like, are they making these movies exclusively for the three of us, or are they making it for my wife and her cousin, who I was watching the movie with, and they loved it?
Yes. Mass appeal is why they're making the movie.
Yeah.
And there has to be just a little bit enough in there for us, at least for the first one. I would love, Dave, I agree with you. I would love for them to like keep feeding us bits. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, so there we go.
Chat says, sounds like the sequel will be in uncharted territory. I am going to ban you from the chat. Puns are the lowest form of humor, in my opinion.
I
just had to rant about that for a second.
Yeah.
Brandon. Sorry, Dave. Are you done? Are you all wrapped up?
Yeah.
You playing your movie this week?
Yeah.
Brandon, what you got?
I played Elden Ring. That's it. It's been a good show, boys.
Brandon, you're always playing Elden Ring. I'm expecting you're going to play Elden Ring.
I'm going to have Dragon Dogma next week. As long as I don't hate it.
I'm sure that you were just like last night when you got home, we're just hopping on Twitch. But still, from the old Fortnite days, I still have alerts on for you for when you get online, because you'd be like, when I get home, I'll get online, we'll play. So I set alerts to know. So last night after I dropped you off, I dropped Dustin and Holly off. I had to go pick up the kids and the dog from my parents. They wanted to talk for a little while. Had to drop all our stuff off at our house. I had to go take the rental car back. So I didn't get home till like 2 hours after I dropped you off.
Right.
But 4 minutes after I dropped you off, I got an alert on my phone that you had signed on the PlayStation.
Yeah, dude.
Were you playing Elden Ring, or were you watching attractive women with less than normal clothes on Twitch?
Most of the women I watch actually wear normal clothes.
Okay.
But most of them anyway.
Answer the question.
No, I watch Twitch on my PlayStation now because the Wi-Fi barely works on my TV. It's a very expensive TV and the adapter is ass. So,
okay, the real question I was going to ask you. You always say, like, I'm playing Elden Ring, that's it. Tell me what's going on in your Elden Ring playthrough right now.
Oh, dude, I big time loving the blood build on PC. I did my katana build, which was blood as well, but the twin blades have a nasty jump attack that has multiple hits and it procs really quick. Last week on stream, I was just mowing through. I mean, I was map clearing, so I was over leveled for a lot of the shit I was doing, but it was just a lot of fun to like actually with ease be able to talk to chat and play Elden Ring at the same time. A couple times, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn. I've played a lot of hours of these games. I'm still pretty bad at them, but it was nice just like rolling around and not getting hit and still being able to read chat. It was like, this is actually really fun to be able to just play this game I love that is perceivably difficult and still be able to chat. So
nice.
Yeah. Cool. It was a good time, man. But Dragon's Dogma next week. We'll see. Maybe I'll play it for 60 hours and write a bad review.
Yeah. Just like the rest of them. I'm hoping that this week I'm going to be able to get in some more rebirth time, but I really do have that itch to play Dragon's Dogma.
And you can.
I can. And I may, but I really want to play Rebirth. I've been itching. I barely got to play any games in the last week because I was so busy planning for our trip, still like last minute stuff, and then going on the actual trip. And I didn't miss it while I was gone. You know, I can take some time off, but I'm home and today I haven't played anything. and I'm kind of itching to play Rebirth real bad.
Did you miss your favorite little blonde twink?
My favorite little blonde twink?
Yeah.
Are you talking about Cloud? Are you disrespecting Cloud like that? There's no one else blonde. I need to have an answer. Who are you referring to?
Is twink disrespectful?
No, but you meant it disrespectfully.
Did I?
I think so.
It's like saying I'm a ginger. Is it disrespectful? I guess if you, it is to you, but not
it's,
to
it's
me.
Like that, it's like that scene in The Office where Michael's asking, Michael asks Oscar, he's like, do you have any other way to describe your Mexicanity? He's like, what do you mean I'm Mexican? He's like, something less offensive. He's like, Michael, Mexican isn't offensive. He's
like, yeah, it's just like, you know, if he's a twink, is that bad? He just is.
All right. That's it for the show. That's all we got this week. Don't forget, you can go over to patreon.com/handsomephantom. Support us for as little as $1 a month. We appreciate that very much. Also, join us on the Discord. Quite a good group of you over there. handsomephantom.com/discord. Audio listeners, thanks for listening whenever you are. If you want, you can always join us on YouTube or Twitter, Handsome Phantom and Ben is Handsome channels. They're in the description if you're, you know, anywhere that has the podcast. We appreciate it. Thank you, guys. We'll stick around for just a few minutes to figure out the show title, and then we're taking off. Have a good night. Goodbye. The HP Podcast is sponsored by our proud patrons over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. The following members are at the $5 level, and we appreciate their contribution. Toby Ryland, Edward Walton, Josh Cummings, Poot, Boots, Passive Pixels Edwin Castillo, Maurice Bays, H-Trons, Nuke Dukem, Derek O, Grabalicious, Benji Bop, and Link.